Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the baby boomers when we come back. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small, and you shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight. A perfect and a just measure shall you have, that your days may be lengthened in the land." Now, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution, at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It tells us, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation, and now, in place of just weights and balances, silver and gold coin. These two presidents have introduced into our current practice in our monetary system the first, second, and fifth planks to the Communist Manifesto. And they've given us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and gold coin, and they've given us clad coinage in place of silver coins. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? If you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons that we teach in our business school, conducted twice a year here at the law school. Now, to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. And best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, the business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package if you prefer. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about the baby boomers, and so far we've got all 7s and 11s, clover and roses. Everything's going great. The ex-secretary of the Department of Labor, Robert Reich, he says, Chuck, we can afford $500 billion. He and his partner, we can afford $500 billion to rebuild New Orleans. We can afford $100 billion a year in Iraq. We can run a deficit of $250 to $700 billion a year in our federal spending. And we can pay for Social Security and Medicare, and we can do it all. And don't worry about a thing. Just sit back and relax. And you know, he's got a good point there. There's the doomsayers on the one hand, and they're wringing their hands, and they're saying, "Oh my God, we're going to go bankrupt, and we won't be able to pay Medicare and Social Security." And then you have the Robert Reiches, and you have the George Bushes, and all these politicians, you know, and they're telling you, "Hell, don't worry about a thing. Everything's coming up 7s and 11s. Everything's fine." And they're telling you the truth. They're not lying to you. Social Security and Medicare are going to pay you every dollar that they promised. Historically, politicians pay off in spades. There's nothing to worry about. I am not at all concerned that you people out there who have been promised so many dollars for Social Security and Medicare, I don't have any fear at all that you're going to collect your money. 100 cents on a dollar. That's the good news. Now, the bad news, the dollars that you receive aren't going to buy very much. And that's because of a little problem called hyperinflation. And we have a country today that's going through hyperinflation. It isn't something new. Most countries in the world have gone through it once or twice. We Americans went through it in 1783, and our founding fathers, they took a look at that and said, never again. Well, never again until we forget about the lessons that we learned today, and then we'll do it again tomorrow. Because history is not and never has been a very good guide to education. People throughout history have not learned from the wars. They haven't learned from the bad weather. They haven't learned from experience. They haven't learned from their monetary mistakes. And so we're constantly reinventing the wheel. And I said this before, and I'll say it again, that the actions that you take have consequences later on. And when we attacked Iraq, well, there were consequences. And now, 4 years later, we are living through those consequences. And Americans are sitting back saying, you know, maybe it wasn't such a good idea after all. But the time to be thinking about, is it a good idea to attack Iraq, bring these guys to justice, or should we sit back and take another look at this, was 4 or 5 years ago. You know, it's like riding on the Titanic. The time to prepare for the sinking of the Titanic is when you're buying the ticket to get on it. It's when you're looking at the ship and you say, oh my God, they've only got half enough lifeboats on this thing. If it sinks, only half the people can get off. I mean, that's the time to be thinking about. But nobody prepares for a Titanic sinking until after the ship hits the iceberg. Nobody thinks of hyperinflation until after the hyperinflation has already set in. Nobody prepares for the worst in advance. It's kind of like World War II. There's some exceptions. There's an iconoclast or two, like, you know, Winston Churchill. He's running around England in 1935, 36, 37. Hitler is preparing for war. Get ready for World War II. We've got to prepare. Who the hell wants to listen to a nutcase like Winston Churchill when everything's coming up sevens and elevens? Now, of course, on September the 1st, 1939, reality set in. You know, by about May or June of 1940, the English kind of figured out, hey, maybe this Winston Churchill knew something about what he's talking about. You know, about 1942, 43, 44, hey, listen, you know, the die is cast, you're in the war, this is where it's at. You know, then the Germans, they had their side of it too, you know. Do you think we really ought to attack Poland? You think maybe we ought to take on Britain, Russia, Poland, the United States all at the same time? Well, history comes back and says, no, you should have done them one at a time, or maybe not at all. But, you know, once the attack was done on September the 1st, 1939, for the Germans, you know, the die was cast, and here we are. And that's where the baby boomers are. Hey, listen, the decisions that were made back in 1913, 1933, 1971... are all coming home to roost now in the year 2007, 2008, 2009. Now don't write me an email and tell me, hey, when's this going to happen? I don't know. I'm a reporter, not a prophet. I don't think Winston Churchill could have told you in 1935 that World War II will begin on September the 1st, 1939, at 6 a.m. in the morning with an attack on Poland. I don't think he knew. He just sat back and said, uh-oh. And I can see what's coming, just based upon history, just based upon what this clown Hitler's talking about. I can pretty well tell you that, hey, war is coming. And sure enough, as it turned out, Neville Chamberlain had called it wrong, and Winston Churchill had called it right. And all Churchill had done was just take a look at history. This is the way it's always been in the past, and I predict it'll probably be that way again in the future. And that's why I'm telling you that the baby boomers are going to get paid off 100 cents on the dollar. Don't worry about a thing. But when hyperinflation sets in, the amount of purchasing power that you have with those dollars is going to be drastically reduced. And when I say drastically reduced, I mean when you have a 401k, and let's say it's got $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 in it. Let me read you a story here from Zimbabwe. Now, just picture yourself right now today. You're sitting here, you're fat and happy, and you're pretty tickled. Your 401k is doing good. Your stocks are doing good. The president tells you everything's coming up 7-11. The AARP, you know, they're telling you everything's fine. You're a baby boomer, and you're happy as a clam at high tide. Now, there's a story. There's a little country called Zimbabwe. It used to be called Rhodesia. And this little country of Rhodesia was settled by the whites, you know, the English, back in the 1800s. They went down there and stole it fair and square from the blacks. Now, don't get upset now. Just like South Africa. And they went down, they colonized it, and they put in big farms, and they put in industries and dams and one thing and another. And you know how the white man is. You know, he just got to get it bigger and better. And they've got an industry going down here. And this little country of Rhodesia is exporting food. Today, they're importing food. Well, if they can get it. They can't import it because they haven't got any money to pay for it. And they're starving to death. But, you know, Rhodesia used to be a net exporter of industrial goods, manufactured goods. They had a robust economy. Everything's going great. And they made some decisions. And the decisions that they made didn't turn out the way they'd kind of expected. Well, they turned out the way it's always turned out in the past, but then, you know, nobody ever expects that to occur in the future. And that's the very definition of insanity. When you do something, when you commit an act, in which you expect a different result from doing the same thing time after time, and you expect a different result each time, it's the definition of insanity. Now, the black people in Rhodesia, they said, well, these whites have got too much, and we're going to take it away from them. That's been done many, many times in the past, and every time that it's done, they always come out losers. But, you know, that's human nature. Human nature says, hey, I see a guy that's got two ice cream cones, and I got to take one of them away from him. And so they did that, and so they had a revolution, and when it was all said and done, the blacks took over, threw the whites out, and so they got a guy by the name of Robert Mugabe, and he's running the country. He's a black guy. He's been running the country for 30 years since they got their independence, and he's not doing too good a job. And they've got a thing there called runaway inflation. Zimbabwe's inflation rate could hit 100,000% by the end of the year. So says the International Monetary Fund. They predicted that yesterday. The forecast came as the country introduced its latest banknote for $200,000, just enough to buy a small bag of onions. $200,000 for a bag of onions. All right, now you got, how much did you say you've got in your 401k? $400,000. All right. When this happens in the United States, you'll have enough money left in your 401k, and when the inflation gets to 100,000% per year, to buy two bags of onions. Small bags. But hey, listen, they're going to pay you every damn dime. Nobody's going to rip you off. You got $400,000 in your 401k, you're going to get paid the $400,000. Now, what it's going to buy is another story. What you're going to get with your money, now that's going to be a little different story. This new bill is worth 400 pounds, English pounds, be about $800, at Zimbabwe's official rate of exchange set by the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe. But on the widely used black market, the $200,000 bill is worth 75 pence. I don't know how much 75 pence is, but it's less than a pound. And a pound is $2. So it's something less than $2. Now, the central bank said that it was introducing the new note, the latest of Zimbabwe's infamous paper bearer checks, for the convenience of businesses and consumers fed up lugging around huge or large wads of money. Now, ironically, the jaunty new red and gray $200,000 bearer checks carry their own glaring picture of failure and mismanagement. Mr. Mugabe was forced to introduce the new banknote on the day that he was due to scrap his old currency. Zimbabwe's bearer checks were only ever supposed to be valid until 31 July 2007, when a new stable currency was to be introduced. Last weekend, the authorities quietly admitted the notes would have to remain in place for another year. And with spectacular disregard for the rules of economics, Mr. Mugabe has vowed to print even more money for underfunded municipal projects. So Mr. Mugabe, like George Bush, you know, if we need more money for the Iraq war, we'll just print it up and go spend it. We need more money for New Orleans, we'll just print it up and go spend it. We need more money for Medicare, we'll just print it up and go spend it. So historically, that's what governments have done in the past. They pay off. They just don't pay off with money that buys anything. So it happened to the Germans in 1923. We just saw it in 2001 down in Argentina. Now, there's a period of time when there's this transition. The transition can last anywhere from a year to 4 or 5 years. That's why I recommend to my students, get ready for about a 4-year siege. You should be prepared for a hyperinflation like we had in 1783. And I tell my students when they come to business school, don't wait for the Titanic to hit the iceberg. A ship traveling at 23 knots, headed straight into 5,000 square miles of iceberg, stands a pretty good chance of finding one. I don't think I would wait until we hit one to find out how bad the damage is going to be. I think I would be prepared for this ship sinking. I think the American economy is going to sink. When is it going to sink? I haven't got a clue. Like I said, I'm not a prophet, I'm a reporter. But historically, this is the way the game is played. Now, in hyperinflated shopping list in Rhodesia, a small bag of onions, $200,000. A bar of Dove soap, $140,000. 1 kilogram of rice, that's about 2.5 pounds, 2.2 pounds, $230,000. 1 liter of fuel, that's a quart, $300,000. That's $1,200,000 a gallon. So, boys and girls, if you think $3 a gallon is getting high priced, wait until it reaches $1,300,000 a gallon. It's coming to a city near you. $200 grams of local cheese is $230,000. 200 grams is about 7 pounds. $230,000 for 7 pounds of cheese. 500 grams of washing machine soap, washing powder, is $750,000. It's about 18 pounds of washing machine soap, $750,000. It's $750,000. A box of bran flakes, $260,000. White loaf of sesame seed bread, $90,000 a loaf. Standard loaves are officially $22,000, but they're not available. See, they got price controls. Wage and price controls. A small pot of jam, $150,000, about a 12-ounce jar. 1 liter of enamel paint, $1.9 million. That's a quart of enamel paint, $1.9 million. 1 packet of biscuits, $140,000. A pack of 4 disposable nappies, those are called diapers in this country, $1.2 million. 1 can, 6-ounce can of tuna, $290,000. 1 tin of baked beans, 15 ounces, $65,000. 500 milliliters of sterilized milk. When it's available, $32,500. 500 milliliters. I don't know how much that is. It must be a half a quart. I think that's a pint. A pint of sterilized milk. $32,000 a pint. God, how much is that a gallon? 8 pints. $32,500 for a half a quart. Times 8 is $260,000 a gallon for milk. That's a bargain. That's less than gasoline. There's no chicken, there's no beef, there's no pork, there's no sausages, there's no cooking oil, there's no sugar, there's no flour, no margarine, no fruit cordial, and no matches. It doesn't make any difference how much money you've got. You can't find beef, pork, sausages, cooking oil, sugar, flour, margarine, fruit cordials, or matches. Oh, 1 egg is $15,000. Where available? Now, the people of Rhodesia made a choice. And this is the outcome of their choice. We Americans made a choice. We made our choice in 1913 when we established the Federal Reserve Bank. We made a second choice in 1933 when we called in all the gold and went to paper currency. We made a third choice in 1965 when we went off silver and created sandwich coins, these clad coins. And then in 1971, we made the final break with sanity when we went off of paying our bills in gold and went to a 100% fiat currency. And as Mr. Mugabe pointed out, he said, if we need it, we'll just print the money. And American presidents and American congresses have said the same thing. If we need the money, we'll just print it up. Now, here in America, we had a lot of assets that we could pledge in the form of bonds. And now we've run out of credit. That's the sad part. We're out of credit. And it's just a matter of time now until at some point in time, the Chinese are going to cut us off. And we import a tremendous amount from overseas. I just wanted to point out to you, for instance, let me give you a couple of examples. Garlic was selling for $16 a pound here in the United States. It's now selling for around $3 a pound. And the garlic comes from China. Now, our garlic industry couldn't compete with that, and so they just went out of business. They were out in Gilroy, California, about a $260 million a year industry. They had to go out of business because they couldn't compete with the Chinese. Now, the Chinese got all the garlic business, or 90% of it. Now, here's what's going to happen. One of these days, when we don't pay our bills, the Chinese are going to say, well, if no pay, you know, no more goodies. And they'll shut that off, and then you won't have your garlic. But it also is going to affect spinach and broccoli. It's going to affect 50% of the food that you eat, because 50% of what you're buying out of your grocery store is not wheat, corn, and soybeans. 50% of what you buy out of your grocery store is berries and milk and wheat thins. And as a result of that, those products are being made overseas and shipped into the United States, and they're going to shut those off. It always happens. And then there's these shortages, like they're having over here in Zimbabwe. Same guy, chicken, beef, pork, sausages, cooking oil, sugar, flour, margarine, fruit. You know, where does your olive oil come from? Well, most of it comes from the Mediterranean countries, you know, like Greece and Italy. When I buy olive oil, I notice that it mainly comes from Italy. Well, if you don't pay the Italians for their olive oil, then they're not gonna sell you anymore. And you're going to find that out, and that's called inflation. And then pretty soon the inflation gets to be where it's hyperinflation. How long does hyperinflation take to set in? Well, in Brazil, it set in 3 days, 72 hours. In Russia, in 1996, when they changed the currency, they changed it over the weekend. On Friday, you left work and went home. You saw the announcement. On Monday, you bring your money in, and they'll give you the new exchange rate. Maybe you'll bring in 1,000 and you'll get 100. Maybe you'll bring in 1,000 and you'll get 10. You don't know what the new exchange rate's going to be. But you're going to be paid. You can rest assured you're going to be paid. Now, if Americans today took all of the money available and went into Walmart and all of the stores and you traded your money for the goods that are on the shelves, you'd get 2%. 2 cents on the dollar. That's everybody in the country. That's why I'm suggesting that while there's still goods on the shelf, take your money, convert it to something of value, and then store it away, because you're going to need it for about 4 years when this thing really turns upside down. These are the bad parts of the story. Now, for the first two programs, I gave you the good news. Got it right straight from Robert Reich and got it from the AARP. Now, let's take a look at reality. There's the hyperinflation story. Now, let me start off here with Financial Sense University, Burdensome Boomers, by David Vanderclout. He said, I'd like to give a simple explanation to illustrate some problems with the United States Social Security system. Although I live in Australia, I find the U.S. Social Security funding issue to be interesting, because Australia will have the same problem funding boomer retirement. But our problem is less clear, because our pensions are paid out of general revenue, general government revenue. Pause here for a little editorial comment. Doesn't make any difference. So is ours. And ours is paid right out of the general fund. And the lie that there's a trust fund over there is just nonsense. Now, our trust fund, I think, has $2.5 trillion worth of bonds sitting in it. The money's already been spent. Hell, Clinton spent that money, and Reagan spent that money, and George Bush spent it. George Bush came to you, you know, a couple of years ago, and he said, "Hey, listen, we gotta redo this Social Security thing." He said, "I want to spend some of my political capital over here." I don't think he spent very much. The Social Security reform lasted about 30 or 60 days. something like that. That's the third rail of politics. And everybody said, well, we can't do that. So I told you the other day, I said, I dropped out of Social Security back in 1978. I said, I'm not going to pay into this anymore. So I stopped. And I saved myself $152,000, because that's what I would have paid in between 1978 and 2003, which would have been my retirement year. And I saved $150,000, and I'm just happy as a clam at high tide. Now, I didn't spend it on airplane gas, but if I'd have spent it on airplane gas and wild women down at Flo's Whorehouse, I'd have been money ahead. Now, you boomers, or you people that are retired on Social Security, you're all right until about 2020. 2030 is the final cutoff day. But I would predict that long before 2020 or 2030, hyperinflation is going to set in and you're going to get paid pennies on the dollar. Remember those 401ks that you got $100,000, $200,000, $400,000 in? Remember those numbers we saw from Zimbabwe? Okay, well, our Federal Reserve is right now inflating your currency at 13% a year. 13%. Now, that doesn't, you don't see the effects of it for about another three years. But the 10% inflation you see today is the effects that you get from 2003 and 4. And they started inflating the money back in 2001. Remember, that was Alan Greenspan. And now you've got all of these bills coming due. You got all these CDOs that are collapsing. You got all these hedge funds that are strung out God knows how far. On leverage, and then you got Social Security and Medicare. Then the president the other day, you know, he went to Congress and he says, "What we need is free drugs for the elderly, because what's coming is going to be so bad they need to be drugged up to keep their minds off of what's coming down the pike." And as I said before, nobody prepares for this up front in advance; they always wait until it happens. And so I just wanted to give you a report ahead of time. Here's this guy from Australia. You know, he writes a letter and he says, hey, listen, they're paying this out of government revenue. Well, we're doing the same thing here. Social Security is paid right out of government revenue. When it comes in today, it gets paid out tomorrow. The basic problem is that so many boomers are about to retire and live so long that it's going to be difficult to support them in the way that has worked up until now. Yeah, the Ponzi scheme has worked up until now. There comes a point in all Ponzi schemes when they run out. Now, let me use a simple example to describe three separate problems that the United States Social Security has. Imagine that a working man with a family to support wants to do a year-long training course. It's going to take his weekends and one day a week. So 3 days a week, he's going to have to go to the training school. 4 days a week, he's going to work. His family cannot afford to lose that day's pay and also pay for the training course. So he devises this plan. For 1 year before his training program, he will work an extra day on Saturday and put his pay of $100 per day into a special box. Then after 1 year of saving, he will commence his training program and draw down the funds from his box. He expects to have enough in savings to support his family during his training period of 1 year. Now, our example situation is very simple. There's a period of more work than usual combined with saving, which will then be followed by a period of less work than usual combined with spending. This situation is analogous to the baby boomers' retirement. While the boomers work, there are more workers than usual and a capacity for a surplus of savings. And then, when the boomers retire, there are more retirees than usual, and a deficit spending will occur. So just like the man in our example, the boomers could and should prepare for the latter situation by saving in a suitable savings vehicle. In our example, a suitable savings vehicle is a box which holds money. In the U.S. Social Security system, the savings vehicle chosen is called the Social Security Trust Fund. But problem number one is not enough. The first problem our man might have is if this period of training turns out to be more expensive, or if the training period were to last longer than the 1 year planned for. If so, the man will run out of money. The United States could have the same problem if the baby boomer's retirement lasts longer or is more expensive than was saved up for. Problem number two, the money is gone. The second problem that our man might have is the security of his cash box. Imagine if toward the end of the first year, the man then discovers that his box has rats living in it, and all of the money is gone, assumed to be eaten by the rats. This man will then face a problem the moment that he commences his training, because at that time he will be short $100 a week because his saved up money has been eaten by the rats. In this case, it's been eaten by the politicians. Now, some say that the Social Security Trust Fund is empty. Well, even if enough money was paid in by the boomers, if it is already gone, then when the boomers retired, there will be nothing there to fund them. So let me pause here and make this observation. Back in 1982, President Reagan, recognizing that Social Security needed to be overhauled again, he and the Congress raised the tax rate to 16.1%. This generated a surplus of about $100 billion a year. Now, this $100 billion a year was going to run from 1982 or 3 until the year 2012. Meanwhile, back on the farm during the 1990s, when President Clinton was in office, they wrote up a $100 billion IOU and stuck it in the trust fund and took the money and spent it on the Great Society. So the money's already been spent. But Social Security has all these bonds sitting in there. They don't have any wheat, corn, beans, honey, or oil. They don't have in the trust fund box things like... they don't have things like, you see my line over here, beef, pork, chicken, sausages, cooking oil, sugar, flour, margarine, fruit cordials, and matches. They've got bonds. So we expect that we're going to be able to cash the bonds in, get the dollars, then go down to Walmart and buy the chicken, beef, pork, sausages, cooking oil, sugar, flour, margarine, fruit cordials, and matches. But I already told you, if you took all that money and went down there and lined up and spent it all, there's only 2% of the actual products on the shelves. Somebody says, oh, well, we'll just go out and make some more. Okay. Okay, but when you want to go out and just make some more radiators, you have to go out and just make some more copper. And if you got to get the copper from the Chileans, you got to pay them. And if you ain't paying them, they ain't going to give you any copper, so you ain't going to make any radiators, so you ain't going to have any more cars. That's, you know, the inevitable end. See, when you have a profligate society of people who have lived for about 75 to 100 years, and they've never gone without shoes, they've never balanced a budget, they've always had plenty of everything, they cannot imagine a ship hitting an iceberg and not having enough lifeboats. It's incomprehensible. That's why nobody prepares for the sinking of a ship. There may be lifeboats on the ship, but nobody's prepared for it. And when hyperinflation sets in, nobody is going to be prepared for it. Well, I say nobody. There might be 5 or 10. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. And if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives and can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use here on the Law Hour are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us at the law school, 417-273-4967. If you'd like a copy of this Scotsman article, it's called News, newsscotsman.com. http://news.scotsman.com. And that's the story on Rhodesia and hyperinflation. Now, I'm looking at the Financial Sense University. It's at www.financialsense, and that's financialsense, all one word, financialsense.com. And we're talking about the shortfall in Social Security, which isn't here yet. See, the Titanic is sailing across the ocean. And as it sails across the ocean, passengers and the crew are all sitting there, you know, sucking on martinis and daiquiris, and everybody's having a good time. But the ship is headed toward 5,000 square miles of iceberg. And we're not going to get to these icebergs for another day or two. And the same thing is true here. You know, the Social Security Administration and the Social Security Trust Fund, you know, there's plenty of money in there. They haven't missed a payment, and they're just writing checks every month, and everything's just sailing along fine. But the problem that you're facing here in the future is that you've got more people drawing out than there are people putting in. And the number of people and the amount of money that you've got in surplus over here is dropping off drastically. So if as a businessman, if I was looking at my ledger, and I would say, well, look at my sales, and look at my employees and my payroll, and look at my cash flow, and look at my reserves in the bank. And I look at my numbers, and I say, oh, my God, look at this balloon payment that we have 4 years in the future. Look at our cash flow. Look at our reserves. I can look ahead to the future and say, about June of 2011, we're not going to have enough money in here to pay the payroll. We are going to be insolvent. That's not today in 2007. That's out here 3 or 4 years in the future. So I can start making plans today to either, one, meet those obligations in the future or bankrupting the company. Now, kind of like Enron. The people at Enron knew that that thing was upside down. All of the upper management knew that thing was upside down at least 5 years before it finally turned turtle. I mean, you know, unless they were stupid. I mean, you know, people that go to Harvard and have Harvard degrees in business administration, those aren't dumb people. Those people aren't stupid. Kinlay wasn't stupid. Those people cashed their stock in before the company collapsed. They made their preparations long before the thing went upside down. But they knew it was coming. And the same thing is true here with governments. Everybody knew that Germany was going into hyperinflation in the 1920s. You know, and the same thing happened. Everybody knew that there was a Great Depression coming in the 1920s. Now, I say everybody. I say everybody in the know knew. Now, of course, the masses of people, they haven't got a clue. The passengers on the Titanic, they haven't got a clue. They don't know. But the upper echelon, you know, the five officers on the bridge and the captain, they know what's coming down. They know what's going on. And, you know, that Titanic thing, just while we're talking about the Titanic, I thought it was kind of surprising that the Titanic was the last ship that they built. They had one more. They'd planned four. They built one, the Olympic. Then they built the second one, the Titanic. They had a third one on the way. It's called the Britannic, I believe it was. Then they had a fourth one. Well, they canceled the fourth one because when the Titanic sailed, they only had half a load of passengers. They had overbuilt for the Atlantic market, and they already had this Britannic already on the drawing board. I mean, it was almost finished. They already had it in the ways, and they were building on. So they needed to solve this problem. We got three ships, but we've only got enough passengers for two. What are we going to do? Let's sink one. Now, I know that that sounds pretty crass, but did you know that the White Star Line, with the one half crossing of the Titanic, was the single most profitable sailing that that company ever experienced? They were paid $5.5 million for the wreck. All of the passengers, dead and alive, collected a little over $500,000, $662,000. That ship needed to be sunk, and it was. And it sailed at 23 knots. They lit up the last boiler and poured on the steam and headed right into 5,000 square miles that they all knew 2 or 3 days in advance had thousands of icebergs in it. The chances of that ship sailing through 5,000 square miles of icebergs without coming into contact with one wasn't great. So, you know, again, the passengers on there, and probably, you know, the average crew member, he didn't have a clue as to what was going on, but you can rest assured that those five guys up on the bridge, they all knew what's coming. And the same thing is true here with Social Security. Everybody in the know, boys and girls, everybody that can add and subtract and is doing the numbers and watching the statistics knows what's coming. And I'm telling you, I'm just a reporter. I just want to tell you what's coming. You're going to get paid 100 cents on the dollar. The dollars you get paid aren't going to buy anything. I wouldn't retire if I was you. I'd put away a 4-year supply of food, clothing, shelter, and everything that you can put your hands on. Get out of dollars and get out of debt. Or any combination of the above. Number three. Problem number three is already dependent. There is a third problem that the man can have, which is more subtle. Imagine if it turns out that the money in the box has not been taken by rats, but by the man's own family. Perhaps the man's son has been taking the $100 that he's putting in there every week, and he's using it on drugs, or his wife has been spending the money on essential household items. In this case, he has double the problem. He now has a $200 a week problem. He's not only short the $100 a week that he needs for his training period and was expecting to take from the box, but now he is short a further $100 a week, which is now needed to pay for the ongoing support of the spending habit that his family has developed unbeknownst to him. To solve this, the man must both wean his family off their spending and somehow replace the lost money. Okay, now here's what our problem is as a nation. We export $200 billion a year worth of goods, and we import $800 billion a year. We have a $600 billion shortfall, just like the man in the story. So, number one, we are suddenly going to be weaned off of that $600 billion a year. You're going to have to stop spending that. And then instantly, you don't have any money in your box. So, you're going to be left with whatever it is that you're still earning. So, you can forget about retirement, just like this man's going to have to forget about his training program. That isn't going to happen. Now, down in Argentina, they just went through this. Now, they're recovering from it. But they went through a period of 62% inflation. They had everything cut off. They were put on COD. They went through a gut-wrenching reorganization. Most of the people there have lost all of their property, and they're starting over at zero COD. Well, just like you did when you got married. You remember? You were flat broke. You had a job, maybe, and you got married, and you started over at zero COD, and you know, over 20 or 30 years, you build up what you've got now. Well, just take everything that you've worked for over the last 20 or 30 years and throw it away and start all over again, because that's where you're headed. That's where we're headed. Now, apparently, the U.S. government has been spending the Social Security surplus on government programs rather than allowing it to accumulate. And the boomers have put savings into a trust fund expecting to become dependent on those funds in their retirement years when they stop working. But unbeknownst to them, they have already become dependent on the trust fund through the mechanism of their government, which has developed a spending habit that matches their current temporary savings ability. This is double the problem, because when the boomers retire, they will have to do without both their accumulated savings, which are now gone, and they will then have to do without the government programs that their savings previously funded. To solve this problem requires the government to be weaned off of its spending habit and to somehow replace the lost money. That's a big task. That isn't going to happen. You're not going to wean yourself off of that $600 billion a year Chinese habit of importing more than you export. You're not going to wean yourself from the Social Security Trust Fund. Well, not until the ship hits the iceberg. Now, when the ship hits the iceberg, there's going to be panic in the streets. And that'll give the president an opportunity to declare martial law. You know, people are talking about the 2008 election, and I always say to people, who in the hell told you there's going to be a 2008 election? What makes you think that you're going to vote George Bush out of the presidency? It's a certainty that if the election were held tomorrow, the Democrats would sweep everything. Don't you think for a minute that the Republicans don't know that? And that's why we need another Pearl Harbor. We need another 9/11 so that we can declare martial law. We've got some big problems ahead, boys and girls, and while you've got your mind on Iraq and Afghanistan, And about a bridge falling down up in Minneapolis, your mind isn't on Social Security and Medicare and the collapse of the economy, 13% inflation, and an economic collapse like the 1920s and 30s. Nobody's thinking about that. And that's why you got bridges collapsing and the president going up to Minneapolis and pledging $250 million and going down to New Orleans. You know, yeah, we got money for New Orleans. We got money for Iraq. We got money for Afghanistan. We got money for the deficits. We got money for imports. We got money for everything. And as Mugabe said, we'll just print it. That's all. Okay. But that doesn't mean that just because you print it that there's going to be any more chicken in the stores. And so for what chicken's left, you're going to bid up the price. And I showed you what the prices were. A gallon of gas is 1.2 million Zimbabwe dollars. And you'll be paying 1.2 million American dollars for a gallon of gas when we go into hyperinflation. Now, what in the hell is that going to do to your $400,000 401k, boys and girls? Let's wake up and pay attention. Smell the coffee. Now, problem number four, can't eat bonds. Now, the fourth problem, which my example does not show, is that the suitability of the savings vehicle itself. While any one person can put money in a box and then later spend it, it isn't possible for all people to do this at the same time. When they all go to spend the money simultaneously, there will be no one to exchange resources for the money. So if an outsized generation such as the boomers wants to retire without being a burden on the next generation, then they must save and invest in appropriate vehicles. Buying government debt from a reliable, large, and young foreign country might work, but saving by way of government debt of their own country will not work, because government debt can only be honored by taxing the next generation. Therefore, saving primarily in your own government's debt does not lessen the burden on the next generation. So in conclusion, I have tried to use a simple example to demonstrate some points about the boomers' retirement funding. The boomers can retire and not be a burden on the next generation if they paid in or saved enough to fund their own retirement, number one. Number two, the money is still there, not lost in a dud investment or taken by thieves. Number three, if they are not already dependent on the savings in an ongoing way before they retire, for example, not living on it or reliant on government programs that spend it. And four, the savings are not overwhelmingly in bonds of their own government. So do the U.S. and Australian boomers meet these requirements? And the answer is a resounding no on all four counts. So again, you know, if you want to depend upon the government's retirement program, that's fine by me. If you want to, rely upon the United Airlines retirement program, that's fine by me. But I'm not relying upon Social Security, Medicare, United Airlines, or the Federal Reserve, Social Security, or any other government agency or organization. I'm relying upon myself. So some years back, when I took a look at the numbers and I crunched them here on my famous Sharp EL1197G3, it said minus when I got down to the bottom line, and I said, oh my God, I can't afford to retire. I've got to work until I die. And I had better, during this transition period, when the ship hits the iceberg and we're transitioning from the ship to the lifeboats, I better have my own lifeboat, because there's not enough lifeboats out there for everybody. The United States government doesn't have enough lifeboats for everybody in America. There are some lifeboats. There are going to be a lot of survivors. But I looked at it and I said, well, I didn't see a spot saved for little Georgie Gordon, so I figured I better make my own lifeboat. All right, so there's bad news number one, bad news number two. Hyperinflation is coming, and there's no money to pay for 300 million Americans when this change comes. Now, there's a little bit more good news. These periods of hyperinflation and collapse of economies, while they are traumatic and they are hard to go through, you know, people survive them. I mean, the people of Argentina have just gone through it again. They've done it several times since 1938. Listen to this. Argentina in 1938 had the fourth largest economy in the world. They were equal to Russia. Today, it's the United States number one, Japan two, Germany three, and China four. Or maybe it's Russia four. I kind of forget. But they were right up there. See, then they went down, and the last time I saw, they were number 38. You know, out of 200 countries in the world, they were number 38. And then in about 2001, they slipped again, and I didn't see a number for them, but it was something below 38. And now they're making a comeback. So the people of Argentina have lived through this boom and bust cycle before, and there will be life again. When it's over, you know, there's life again. George Patton, I think, summed it up quite nicely. He said, it's not how high you climb on the ladder. It is how well you bounce on the bottom after you fall off the ladder. So I look back on life, and I looked when I first got started out, and I started out and I went up rapidly. And I kind of leveled off, and then I went broke. And then I started over again at zero COD, and then I went up again, and I got up to this level, and then I leveled off, and then I fell off the ladder and I went broke. Now, so far, little Georgie's done pretty well. I bounced on the bottom pretty well. And I've bounced up and down three or four times. Now I'm up here at the top again. And things are going well. But I figured that I better not level off. And then I better keep on working and I better prepare for the sinking. Now, if this ship sails right on through, if the great ship America can sail right on through and there's no problems, terrific. God bless George Bush. God bless the Republicans. But in the event that it doesn't, I said to myself, I guess I better prepare for it. And so I just wanted to throw this out to you and say, I'm not really sure that there's going to be as much money, as much in the way of goods and services. I don't think there's going to be quite the soft landing that everybody's been predicting. But again, you know, if it is a nice, neat, soft landing and everything turns out sevens and elevens, God will love them all. I'll live through it just like all the rest of it. But on the other hand, if we have a real rough landing over here, I put away a little extra chicken, a little extra canned chicken here on the shelf, just in case, because I saw here in Rhodesia they don't have any canned chicken. They don't have much else either. Now, the boomers are going bankrupt at a faster rate. Now, Americans over the age of 55 are filing for bankruptcy at a faster rate than the general population, as growing mortgage debt and higher health care costs make them more vulnerable, a new study shows. The trend of rising bankruptcies among older Americans is likely to continue for the foreseeable future, according to the study's authors. They found that the aging of the population alone does not account for the rise in older filers and that bankruptcy courts can anticipate an influx of new bankruptcy petitions as the baby boom generation continues to age. Senior researcher Jose Garcia, who examines consumer finance trends at the New York based Demos, said rising costs for housing and health care, especially prescription drugs, have made older Americans more dependent on credit. This in turn makes them more vulnerable to financial rough spots. Oh, by the way, your Congress passed new legislation here a couple of years ago so that you can't bankrupt out of your debts. We're going to have perpetual credit debt serfs. Just thought I'd let you know that. Now, we haven't gone totally to the debtor's prisons, but we're headed there. We're not there yet, but we're headed there. And I would submit to you that the time is coming when you will not be able to bankrupt out. I mean, you won't be able to bankrupt out at all, period. No way, no shape, Jose. Now, the ABI Journal study used data from the courts and public records to track how filing rates among different age groups have changed over time. In 2002, the percentage of Americans older than 45 who entered bankruptcy reached 39%. And that was up from 27% in 1994. Now, the steepest increase in Chapter 7 filings occurred among people older than 55. Now, the authors also found that the median age of those filing for bankruptcy was 41.4 in 2002, which was up from 37.7 in 1994. The youngest Americans, meanwhile, had a drop in filings, with 4% of Americans under the age of 25 filing for protection. So the authors' Aging in Bankruptcy, the Baby Boomers Meetup at Bankruptcy Court, will be published in the May 2000 issue of the American Bankruptcy Institute Journal. This is published by www.msnbc.msn.com. All right, so now you're caught between a rock and a hard spot, you baby boomers. You have to rely on credit because you don't have the money. Inflation's running 13%, and you're unable to pay your bills. You haven't got enough savings. Social Security isn't going to be there in the crunch, and hyperinflation is on the horizon. Bad news. All right, now with that bad news, let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Remember, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Well, our time's about up. We'll have to leave it right here. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.